Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and now it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. The Boston Celtics are currently the favorite at plus 160, but the team that's third in my championship rankings, the Dallas Mavericks, you can get them on DraftKings right now at plus 1600 to win the title. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HOOPS, H-O-O-P-S, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario, bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Saturday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible weekend. Well, day one of the NBA playoffs is officially in the books. We're going to keep it really simple tonight. We're just going to do instant reactions to all four games in reverse order, starting with Lakers Nuggets and finishing with Cavs Magic. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel so you don't miss any more of our videos. Follow me on Twitter at _JasonLT. That's going to be important over the next couple of months because I'm going to be doing a bunch of impromptu film sessions in the mornings when I have time to kind of go over some actual visual examples of the things that we talk about at night in the live shows. And again, those are going to be just kind of like short notice types of things they don't really plan on. We're just going to do them when we have some time in the mornings. But I'm going to announce them and tweet out links and stuff from my Twitter feed. So make sure you follow me on Twitter at _JasonLT. Don't forget about our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts, under Hoops Tonight. It's also super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on that front. And the last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions in the YouTube comments. We'll probably hit one or two mailbags a week during those film session pods during the day. All right, let's talk some basketball. So starting with Lakers Nuggets, I said before the series, in our series preview, that there were two major dynamics working in Denver's favor. Obviously, the first piece is that Jokic and Murray, at this phase of their careers, are a better duo than LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who at this phase in their careers are slower, less consistent athletically. LeBron and AD met their level tonight. They combined for 59 points on just 41 shots. They had 20 rebounds and 13 assists. Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray at 54, 18, and 17. I thought all four of those guys dominated different stretches of the game. Obviously, you know, Jokic was really aggressive in the first quarter, then wasn't super aggressive in the middle portion of the game, and then got aggressive late, right? Like LeBron James was super aggressive early in the game. Anthony Davis was super aggressive late in the game. Different phases of the game, different guys in that group of four all took over. And really high-level basketball was being played by those guys. But as I said, there are two dynamics that are working in Denver's favor. They also have a better rest of their starting lineup. Michael Porter Jr. and KCP, as well as Aaron Gordon, in my opinion, are a better trio of basketball players than Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, and Rui Hachimura. And they got completely blitzed in today's game. Those three outscored the Lakers trio 43-33. And here's the big one, killed them on the glass. 21-10 rebound advantage between those three guys and those Lakers three. And so I kind of want to start with the D'Lo matchup, because that obviously was the biggest swing factor that went against the Lakers last year and was my major point of concern coming into this series. And one of the main reasons why is that when D'Lo's not hitting shots, because he's also not a good, you know, kind of attentive off-ball defender, and that's such an important thing to be against Denver in particular, as soon as you have to take D'Lo out, because when he's not making shots, he becomes borderline damaging as a basketball player, you have to bring in one of those backup guards, somebody like Gabe Vincent or Spencer Dinwiddie, and those guys are just nowhere near the level offensive player, and they allow Denver a lot more leeway with how to guard the Lakers. And so I had my eye on this matchup coming in. And again, specifically, there's three things, that we're looking at with D'Lo. One, can he actually make shots in an environment this physical? And what was he, 1-for-9 from three tonight? Just couldn't make them. Some bad misses in there too. That's the thing with D'Lo. Like, he's a outstanding shooter that for whatever reason, when the intensity and the physicality picks up, the shots just tend to not go in. Decision-making. For the most part today, I didn't think it was that bad of a decision-making game from D'Lo. Had a really bad transition kick-ahead pass to Rui Hachimura. Took a couple really, really tough shots in pick and roll that were in the mid-range and at the rim that I didn't think were good shots. But like, that wasn't the worst part of his game today. But on the defensive end of the floor, we saw that off-ball attentiveness. Now, again, usually what the Lakers have been able to do with D'Lo is put him onto a pretty limited offensive player. And so he can kind of roam around and play passing lanes and just kind of do the D'Lo float around thing. Can't do that with KCP. KCP is an extremely active offensive player, running his lane in transition, cutting and screening off the ball. He's a guy that can hit movement jump shots, which requires you to be engaged in lock and trail situations. I tweeted out a clip today of a play where D'Lo, after literally KCP had already made, I think, two or three threes at this point, D'Lo's guarding KCP. KCP's setting him up for a screening action. D'Lo's not paying attention. When KCP makes the cut, D'Lo's just a split second late to start his lock and trail. KCP breaks free again to hit another shot. Now, it's just one game, and D'Lo has been better in some high leverage games this year, not the least of which were the New Orleans Pelicans game, a team that also brings a lot of length and athleticism on the perimeter and can cause problems. So again, that dynamic just has to switch around the other way. You saw that KCP just flat out outplayed D'Angelo Russell today. That's a matchup that swung heavily in that favor. In Denver's favor. I don't want to go too hard on Rui. Rui is being put in a really, really difficult spot in this series. He's being asked to guard Nikola Jokic. LeBron and AD are basically just leaving him hung out to dry there. There was a little bit more AD on Jokic in the fourth quarter, but for the most part, they've just kind of let him go down there and get barbecued. And one of the problems there is like, he can't help you on the glass like that. And LeBron and AD are getting caught in a lot of cross matches anyway, where they're getting pulled away from the rim. One of the things I talked about during the game, for those of you guys who follow me on Twitter, like these cross matches where like AD falls down in the backcourt and then runs down the floor and ends up guarding Michael Porter Jr. Those are totally disastrous because either his instincts as a helper bring him into the lane and then Michael Porter Jr. hits a three over him, which happened in this game, or AD is stuck contesting threes or guarding him at the three-point line, which leaves Rui and LeBron by themselves underneath the basket to contend with Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic, which is going to end the same way just about every single time. And this is something with AD where like he falls down a lot on layup attempts, and it's a grifting thing. Like I know all there's a small, I'm going to reference them as a small segment of the fan base, because I don't necessarily think it's a prevailing opinion among normal basketball fans, but there are some people out there that think the Lakers get basically conspiracy theory whistle and that the league is trying to give them a free throw advantage. And like, really, well, all it is the Lakers are a defense that doesn't commit fouls, and then they score almost all their points in the paint, and they have a bunch of guys who are good at grifting, right? Austin Reeves is a grifter. Anthony Davis is a grifter. But when you grift, there's a downside to it. Anthony Davis, when he takes shots around the rim and he falls down, sometimes he gets a call and the other team is perplexed and they look over the sideline and they wonder what's going on. And yeah, obviously that's where it works out for AD. But then when he falls down and he doesn't get the call, the Nuggets are extremely good at pushing out the other way. Jokic, you can always see Jokic, like look behind him, identify the ADs on the ground, and he immediately starts pushing the other way. And if they don't get a basket in transition, they get a cross match, and then the cross match ends up causing problems anyway. They had 21 fast break points in this game. They dominated the offensive glass and dominated those fast break situations. Those are execution related mistakes. And like, you know, this is going to be something we talk a lot about with the Lakers in particular in this series. Denver is the best execution team in the league, in my opinion. They had just 4 turnovers in this game. Every time they found a favorable matchup that they liked, they immediately looked to attack it. Even like little things, like I noticed that when Michael Porter Jr. or Jamal Murray would get AD on a switch, whether it was in a screening action or in transition, those guys just know to get a shot up, because it doesn't matter if they miss, because the Lakers are such a bad backline rebounding team. And, you know, it, like if LeBron is engaged in a box out with Nikola Jokic, or Rui Hachimura is engaged in a box out with Nikola Jokic, even if you happen to keep him ground bound, he's either going to reach over the top and grab it, or any other location for the rebound is going to be a favorable situation for Aaron Gordon. And so that's going to be a big thing that we're going to be looking at for the Lakers to have any chance to keep this series competitive in the long run. They have to execute better. We talked about D'Angelo Russell and KCP. We talked about cross matches in transition situations. It's almost more important for AD to just sprint back every time than anything else that he can get on the offensive end, attacking the offensive glass or trying to get to the foul line. Because again, those are possessions that Denver is scoring at an extremely efficient rate. I wanted to shout out DeAndre Jordan. You know, so he ended up having to come into this game because I thought the Lakers came out really well early. They came out super physically aggressive. LeBron and AD were outplaying Jokic and Murray in the early portion of the game. They were playing super physical defense. Austin Reeves, even though he struggled in specific stretches, I thought he did a solid job chasing Jamal Murray around. They had control early. They got 2 fouls apiece on both Peyton Watson and Aaron Gordon. And so Mike Malone's in a little bit of a predicament. He ends up having to go to DeAndre Jordan. I thought DeAndre Jordan was really good, setting good ball screens and rolling into space. He scored on the roll twice, once with a dunk, once with a foul. He held up well against Anthony Davis and ISO. This is actually ironic because AD in isolation was a huge issue for the Lakers last year. And that was something that I talked about in our series preview. Like Jokic, I can't remember the exact number, but Jokic just like completely put AD in jail in one-on-one situations last year. And that was a huge problem. One of the encouraging pieces here was Anthony Davis, especially in that fourth quarter run, was like going right at Nikola Jokic and scoring relatively easily, which is, if you're looking for a silver lining as a Lakers fan, LeBron and AD looked great. And so all you really need is for your role players to play better. But again, like this is the thing. It's so funny. This is the one series that I'm watching as a fan, right? Like I have a rooting interest in this series for the Lakers. All these other series I'm just covering as an analyst, right? But like, as a fan, I've got my basketball brain behind it, right? And all of my experience with the game and all of my film study, and I know the result, right? Like, I know how this movie ends. This movie ends the way tonight ended in, you know, 5 or 6 games, you know, at some point over the course of the next couple of weeks, right? So like, it's kind of like watching a car crash in slow motion when you know exactly what needs to be done, but you know that those guys struggle to do that. And so like you're hoping for something that can't actually happen. And there's a certain helplessness and a hopelessness that you feel as a fan watching Denver. But honestly, to get that type of performance out of DeAndre Jordan, that's just found money in a playoff series. I thought that was big time. You know, getting back to the execution thing, One of the things that the Lakers have done all season long, and you Lakers fans will know exactly what I'm talking about here, is they can go through these like 3-4 minute stretches where they literally lose their fucking mind, like on both ends of the floor. Horrible execution mistakes, not sprinting back in transition, giving up cross matches, not sticking to the game plan, bad closeouts, all this kind of stuff. And then on the other end of the floor, also losing their mind in offensive execution. Do you guys remember the Jamal Murray three, the three in the corner? It was a transition play. He was in the deep corner. It was a transition kick ahead. It was the one where the pass went, got kicked up the floor to Aaron Gordon, and LeBron was there and kind of like funneled him behind the backboard. And then Aaron Gordon kicked it to Jamal Murray in the right corner. D'Lo and Austin both quit on that play. They were both jogging back and neither of them were getting matched up. LeBron did his job and forced the kick ahead pass into a position where he couldn't score. From there, your transition defense has to spread out and get matched up. And it's like, that's not, oh, we lost because Jokic is amazing. That's not, oh, we lost because Jamal Murray keeps hitting shots. That's you not doing your job. And when you don't do your job, Denver makes you pay. And then they'll go through these lulls on the offensive end of the floor where it's like their success offensively comes through five out and horn sets and three-man actions at the top of the key to get the defense into rotation and then playing off of each other with your aggregate offensive skill. But they'll lose their damn minds and just walk the ball up the floor and run a ball screen, and D'Lo will miss some shot, or LeBron will get a switch and take a bad step back three or something like that. And like, really, if you zoom out of this game, the Lakers stayed really competitive throughout, except for a bad stretch in the middle of the second quarter and a bad stretch in the middle of the third quarter. But that's what Denver does. They don't stop executing. They just keep playing Denver Nugget basketball until you let go of the rope. And then as soon as you let go of the rope, all hell breaks loose and you end up in a really bad position. So again, like, as a fan, it was tough to watch, but this is kind of more or less what we expect in this series, right? Like, Denver is their duo. Like, again, LeBron and AD were able to match Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic in a one-game setting. Will they be able to do that throughout the series? I think that's going to tilt towards Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic over the course of the series. Do I think Rui and D'Lo and Austin will have a game or two in this series where they outplay the Nuggets role players? Yeah, I think they'll have a game or two where they do so. And when they do, Lakers have a good chance to win. But chances are, over the course of the 5, 6, 7 games, however long this series goes, chances are those dynamics are going to tilt towards Denver. It's not just a one-game thing. This is what they've been doing all season. Like, the Lakers have had issues with 3-4 minute stretches of bad basketball that cost them 10 points on the scoreboard all season long. It's part of their basketball character. It's who they are. So again, like, we like to pretend like this stuff doesn't matter, but it does matter, because you ended up in a big game here. You threw a great punch. You had a double figure lead and you choked it away in a matter of minutes in the second quarter. It wasn't like a long drawn out Denver run. It was a handful of possessions and the game was tied. And like, it, like, again, that so believe teams when they tell you who they are over the course of the regular season. So good win for Denver. Again, expect a couple of adjustments I expect from the Lakers. I think they will eventually have LeBron James and Anthony Davis take more of the Nikola Jokic assignment. I think offensive execution is going to be a big one from them too, just in the sense that they're going to need to stay into their five out and run action and make sure they don't get stagnant. And then lastly, I think Darvin Ham's going to have to make a call on nights like tonight when D'Lo just doesn't have it. You know, maybe you get, instead of getting 1-for-9 out of D'Lo, you get 1-for-4 out of Gabe Vincent, but he doesn't lose KCP four times, right? So like, those are the types of decisions that Darvin's going to have to make over the course of the series. You want to give D'Lo another chance. You need D'Lo out there. He's a swing piece in the series, but if he doesn't have it, you got to pivot.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests we're gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on to Sixers-Knicks. I saw so much of what I liked about both teams in this matchup, right? Like I said in our series preview, the Knicks are the tougher, more physical team that has better basketball character, right? They get 23 offensive rebounds and they dominate the fast break point advantage 27-11. What I say about the Sixers, they are the more talented team, especially when it comes to offensive skill. Well, the Sixers in this game had a 99 offensive rating in the half court. And the Knicks had just a 77 offensive rating in the half court. So that's right. The Knicks lost the half court battle by over 22 points per 100 possessions, yet they won the game because they absolutely dominated on the margins. 26-8 in second chance points, 27-11 in fast break points. That's a 53-19 advantage. So like the reality is for the Sixers that they have to kind of remember here is like, the toughness from the Knicks is not going away. It's their basketball identity. It's who they are. So if the Sixers want to have a chance to win the series, they absolutely have to hold up better on the glass and in transition. Better box outs, better efforts for contested rebounds, sprinting back in transition. Now, one thing I'll say for the Sixers, I do think they got a little shook up by the Embiid injury there in that late first half situation. And obviously it was a deluge of a run from the New York Knicks there, but they had a similar kind of issue there in the fourth quarter where they were getting pushed around. So that's something that they're going to have to deal with. But despite all of that, the Sixers did have a fourth quarter lead. It was the game plan that burned them. We talked about in our series preview that I thought the Sixers had to kind of close out short on Josh Hart to try to shrink the floor on Jalen Brunson and try to make things tougher on him. And, you know, Josh Hart this season shot just 32.8% on catch and shoot jumpers, but he made four of them in this game, including a couple of massive ones late in the game. And so some of that is like, you just got to tip the cap because as part of the game plan, if you start chasing Josh Hart off the 3-point line, that's just going to make things easier for Jalen Brunson. You have to kind of hope that over the course of the series that works in your favor. I thought the Sixers generally did a good job on Jalen Brunson. I was initially kind of annoyed at how often they were giving up switches. So like we talked about this in our series preview, but like what the Knicks will do is they'll run a guard screen at the beginning of the possession to get the matchup they like with Jalen Brunson. Then they will go run the ball screen, right? And so what they were doing in this game is they were bringing up Tyrese Maxey every single time and getting him switched on to Brunson, and then Brunson was going to work, which was irritating me just because I feel like there's I feel like you can get better screen navigation out of Kelly Oubre and Nick Batum. And I felt like it was just too much of the game plan to concede those switches. But then Tyrese Maxey just did a really good job. I think he blocked Jalen Brunson from behind with back pressure at least two or three times. Like, did a good job. And they shrunk the floor. They Embiid, when he was on the floor, did an amazing job protecting the rim. It was a very good defensive effort from Philly in the half court. It was on the margins where they lost this game. But easily the biggest story of this game, in my opinion, was Mitchell Robinson and Deuce McBride. So one of the things we talked about in the series preview was Deuce McBride being more capable of hanging with Tyrese Maxey in terms of his quickness. And I showed you guys some clips in the film session, if you guys remember. But I also talked about how Deuce McBride actually has like a little bit more offensive pop than what he gets credit for. He's a guy, he's one of those like classic guards who like wasn't viewed as an NBA level kind of initiator, but was viewed as an NBA level defender. And so his role in the NBA was kind of like defensive focused, but he is a guard that has a lot of experience doing work off the bounce. And he has some of that in his game. And a little by little over the course of the last couple of years, you just see like on any given night, you just see a little bit more of Deuce and a little bit more of what he can do offensively, especially after they traded away, everybody in the OG Anunoby deal, right? Like that just kind of put them in a situation where Deuce had to be more aggressive offensively, and he's taken advantage of that. He had some big shots in this one, including that big pull-up three at the middle of the at the top of the key there in that fourth quarter run. Like, and you saw it in the minutes. Deuce played more than Dante DiVincenzo. That clearly is the direction that they're looking to go. I also thought he did a good job flattening out Tyrese Maxey drives. Talked a lot about Tyrese Maxey dribble penetration in the series preview. It's one of the biggest factors for how I think Philly can keep New York in rotation when they get into the half court. And you saw that, like, especially in that third quarter run. My God, Tyrese Maxey was just dusting everybody off the dribble and getting into the lane. But again, when you flatten out the drive a little bit, just imagine like this, instead of a straight line drive, a little bit more of a banana route to get to where you're going, that buys time for your back line to actually recover and to get into position defensively. And I thought, you know, honestly, like, it's going to be one of those things where I think over the course of the series, we're going to see a lot more of Deuce McBride, either in the starting lineup or just playing more minutes and certainly closing the game. As far as Mitchell Robinson goes, I thought he was a revelation. I want to shout out Joel Embiid. I thought he dominated this basketball game for the most part. And like, you saw it from the opening tip. He was being physically aggressive. Like, he made some jump shots, but like, he was looking to play bully ball towards the rim, which is something we've all been begging for with Embiid for a really long time, right? Getting where he wanted to go, having a lot of success. In that fourth quarter run in particular, you saw the advantage that Mitchell Robinson brings in terms of his size. So one of the things that I noticed, and I'll kind of share this as an example just with my experience playing. So like, when I'm looking across my across the way at a defender, and I know that I can get a shot over him whenever I want, there's a very comfortable feeling I have where I know that like, I can at any moment, even if I make a move and I get cut off, I can get to this pull up jump shot or the step back jump shot or this whatever off the dribble jump shot to get a decent look over the top. But whenever I do play against a really lanky wing, someone that can actually kind of like provide that contest to where I have to get separation to get to my pull-up jump shot, it changes everything about my approach offensively. Now I almost always have to call in a screening action, because why would I try to take an extremely difficult shot over a lanky contest when I can try to navigate him through a screen to try to get to a different spot on the floor? That gap there is about the length. If the length isn't there, I'm always comfortable because I know it can get over the top. If the length is there, it fundamentally changes the way you have to approach things offensively, right? Did you notice the difference in the Joel Embiid jumpers when Mitchell Robinson was on him in the second half? They weren't just misses. They were bad misses. Mitchell Robinson's contest was damn near at Embiid's release point, significantly bothering him, and he was missing him like way short, barely grazing the front of the rim on some of these. Why does that matter? Because when Embiid is in those, like when he's catching at the top of the key in the pick and pop, or when he's working in that, you know, 18-foot area off of the short roll, and he's catching and he's jab stepping, typically what happens, the dynamic that he runs into with other defenders around the league, is the guy either is too far off and Embiid can just easily jab step to gain his rhythm and rise up over the top and knock down that shot at a high percentage, or the guy has to pressure because he doesn't have the length to bother the shot, so he has to bother the shooting pocket. That's when they get into issues committing fouls, right? What gives Mitchell Robinson the advantage in this matchup is he can actually play off a little bit while also getting a great contest. He blocked Embiid on a three earlier in the game. I showed a clip in a film session a while back of a play of him blocking Damian Lillard in drop coverage once when he was sprinting back in transition. His reach when he gives a contest is freaking insane, and he can really cause problems there. And so now Embiid is going to have to solve that. And he drew a foul on Mitchell Robinson late in the game on a rip through move when he just got really physically aggressive. But that's going to be his kind of like chess match that he's going to have to solve. Mitchell Robinson. And by the way, this is part of what it takes, you know, reaching where you want to reach as a basketball player. It's not always going to be easy. Even the best players in the world, they have advantages over the vast majority of players in the league, but they end up running into a guy or a handful of guys that can kind of hang with them physically, and then it becomes more of a challenge. Think like LeBron James in his prime against Kawhi Leonard or Andre Iguodala. Right? It's like these guys can really match up with LeBron athletically, which makes it so that he has to work a lot harder for his buckets, right? We've even seen it with Jokic with some of the bigger, stronger centers around the league, like Embiid, like Yusuf Nurkic. When there are guys that can kind of match Jokic and some of his size and strength, it just makes the game a little bit tougher, right? And so Embiid is running into a challenge here. Mitchell Robinson can kind of sort of hang with him physically. And so that's the advantage, or that's the swing factor that he has to deal with, right? Deuce McBride can kind of hang with Tyrese Maxey's speed. Mitchell Robinson can kind of hang with Joel Embiid's size. So adjustments for Philly moving forward in the series, Philly has to match New York's toughness at some level. They can't keep letting Josh Hart run roughshod over them for every offensive rebound, and they have to make their box outs. They have to get back in transition, all of those details, right? But secondly, Joel Embiid has to find a way to solve the Mitchell Robinson problem. And again, like I said, I think what it's going to be is physical aggression and trying to get him into foul trouble. Because if he can get him off the floor with foul trouble, he's had a lot of success against Hartenstein in this particular game.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on to Suns Wolves. So there are two pendulums in this series that we're going to see swing back and forth. And so I want to start with the Suns on offense. If you guys remember, all season long, I've been talking about with the Suns the difference between when they play advantage basketball versus when they play one-on-one or two-on-two basketball. One-on-one obviously meaning ISO post-ups, two-on-two obviously meaning ball screens, right? And they've been really good with that this year, right? They're 64% in assist percentage this season. They were 57% in the postseason last year. Obviously, the data in the regular season is messed up because of the Kevin Durant trade. But post All-Star break this year, they've been even better. They've been at 66% in assist percentage. But they had just 16 assists on 33 made field goals against Minnesota. That's just a 48.5% assist percentage. So like that is the pendulum for Phoenix offensively. Are they playing advantage basketball, playing drive and kick and getting guys closeout opportunities, or are they trying to make tough contested pull-up jump shots over elite individual defenders, right? And you saw that today, and the Stars mostly struggled. KD was great, but he had by far the most favorable matchup, right? Minnesota went with Karl Towns on him to start the game. He went 11 for 17 from the field with 31 points, right? But Bradley Beal was just 6 for 10 with 15 points, and Devin Booker was just 5 for 16 with 18 points, right? So that's 11 for 26 for 33 points. That's just not good enough from those two guys, right? I want to shout out the Wolves perimeter defenders. I thought Anthony Edwards was incredible. I thought Jaden McDaniels did an insanely good job. Nikhil Alexander-Walker was really good. And then Mike Conley. You know, for, you know, a guy that doesn't really have a reputation as being a quality perimeter defender, I thought he defended extremely well in this game. So here's the question, though. Jason, you also said in your series preview that Minnesota's game plan should be to guard those things one-on-one and two-on-two, stay home off the ball, and bait them into that. You are correct. And that is absolutely what Minnesota is trying to do. So Minnesota won the game plan battle in this particular situation, right? They're trying to make Phoenix make shots, tough contested shots in one-on-one and two-on-two situations. So how do you counter that? How do you counter when a defense is trying to make you play one-on-one on two-on-two and stay home off the ball? You have to take advantage of the little tiny windows that do materialize, right? So the way that you avoid those one-on-one and 2v2 situations is when they're running their screening actions, you do a good job communicating switches and pursuing over the top so that you don't leave openings, right? And when the openings appear, you chase them off by closing out, right? And you quickly close those openings and you get back into your one-on-one situations. And then it's just about not overhelping. So if you see a guy working downhill or a guy rolling in pick and roll, instead of tagging the roller, you stay home. Instead of digging down on the driver, you stay home. And essentially, you bank on the fact that Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels or Rudy Gobert and Anthony Edwards are going to be able to make those into low enough percentage shots, right? That's kind of like the game plan version of it, right? But even when that's happening, and we're going to do a film session on this. I don't know if I'll be able to get one in tomorrow, but we'll certainly have a film session on Monday. So at some point in the next 2 days, certainly before game two of all these series, I'll give you guys some visual examples to demonstrate what I'm talking about. But there are openings that do briefly kind of appear in Minnesota's defense. Those have to be capitalized on every single time. If there's a hedge in recover, even if it's only a little bit open, throw the swing pass. Because even if the defender is closing out, there's usually a baked-in rip-through, right? Hedge, recover. He's recovering on the, the ball handler's on the left wing and the screener's on the right wing and it's Grayson Allen and he sets a brush screen and he slips out. And on-ball defender throws Grayson Allen's defender throws a quick hedge and recovers out. He's closing out on Grayson Allen's right hand. So Grayson has to catch and rip. Little examples like when Kevin Durant was getting doubled in the post on Karl Towns and Jaden McDaniels was guarding Grayson Allen on the left wing, and Grayson Allen's playing that stupid back and forth re-enter kick out game. At one point, Grayson Allen pump faked, and Jaden McDaniels jumped out of his shoes, and Grayson Allen just threw another post entry. It's like, no, that's it. The job is done. He left his feet. You drive now. As soon as you drive, you wait for the next defender to come up. You make the read. That is when the Suns are at their best because they have such amazing drive and kick talent. And I really do think they're the most talented drive and kick team in the league when they actually play that way. But they get away from that too frequently. So obviously taking advantage of those little openings that show up, any three-man action that causes switching. So I talked about this with the Lakers, but being deliberate about running your sets at the beginning of the possession to create those small openings. So usually when there's a switch, there's usually a small gap in time right when the defender switches where the new defender on the ball is not quite in position to take advantage of it. Those have to be quickly taken advantage of. Getting multiple actions in the same possession. Those of you guys who have followed our film sessions have seen when you run action on the strong side and then move it around and run action again, that second side action is almost always more effective because the defense isn't loaded up. It's rotating over as you're running the action versus loaded up as you're running the action, right? So be deliberate about playing with more pace. Get the ball across half court quickly. Run something, reverse the ball to the other side, run it again, and then you'll have a better chance of getting the defense in rotation. Lastly, find an entry point. So for instance, Kat was on Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant was mainly using that as an opportunity to hunt his own shot. Totally fine. KD's super efficient. Those were efficient possessions. What I would do is use KD on Kat as an entry point. Use it as a means with which to get the defense in rotation. Those double teams like I was talking about. Grayson Allen pump fake, get out of his shoes, drive the closeout, right? KD using those dribble combinations to get Kat off balance and then beat him off the dribble. Get into the lane, draw a second defender, kick out. Use entry points to get the defense in rotation. Again, you've got to generate closeout opportunities for Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. They're not going to be efficient enough against the top-tier perimeter defense talent that Minnesota has. And then I want to shout out Rudy Gobert in a lot of these two-on-two situations. So again, we've talked so much about the one-on-one element in ball screens and two-on-two. Rudy Gobert's ability to credibly defend on the ball screen while also defending the role man is what makes this work. And then in a lot of situations when the Phoenix ball handlers were dragging the ball screens out, Gobert sliding with them and switching and then guarding these guys on an island. And then they're comfortable, kind of just keeping Nurkic off the glass by just kind of peeling off and boxing him out. Right. So that dynamic, it's the bracket coverage that I always talk about. And you're not going to find a better bracket in the league than Gobert and Jaden McDaniels, right? Those are two of the very best at that specific dynamic. So that pendulum is going to be with Phoenix on offense is going to swing back and forth over the course of the series with Phoenix gets Minnesota in rotation a lot and gets really fluid, beautiful basketball, beautiful shots in high level offense, or back the other way, stagnant one-on-one and two-on-two, really tough contested pull-up jumpers against outstanding individual defenders. Minnesota on offense, the pendulum is Anthony Edwards. His playmaking and his pull-up shooting. You saw the Phoenix game plan early. We talked about this in the series preview. When Anthony has the ball, they're running a high drop with Nurkic and they're hedging with Eubanks and they're tagging the roller. They're digging down in driving lanes. They're overloading on Ant and basically trying to bait him into not making the reads and settling for bad shots, either driving into traffic and turning it over, which he did six times tonight, or taking early bad pull-up jump shots, right? That's the pendulum. And then with Mike Conley, they're doing a low drop, staying home off the ball, trying to bait him into being a scorer, trying to take advantage of his lack of aggression. It's two very different game plans for two very different types of ball handlers. Now, early in the game, Anthony Edwards struggled, and you saw that on the scoreboard as Phoenix was hanging around. He wasn't hitting shots. He was turning the basketball over. It was bad, right? But this is where it gets weird. The game plan is set up to get Ant to settle for bad shots, but consistently Ant has made them in the postseason. That's where it gets tricky. He's been one of the worst volume pull-up jump shooters in the league over the last few years in the regular season, but he consistently turns around and hits them in the postseason. So 2022, 0.91 points per pull-up jumper. 1.14 against Memphis in the playoffs. 2023, 0.91 again over the course of the regular season, 1.09 against Denver in the playoffs. This year, even worse, 0.88 points per shot attempt in pull-up jump shot situations. Today, he was 8 for 14. Came out to 1.36 points per pull-up jumper. He hit three in a row right in KD's face. Like, there's no game plan for that with Ant. If he's going to hit those, they're not just going to win this series. They have a good chance to win it all. Because part of the thing with Ant is his downhill force is so oppressive that every defender is back on their heels. So all he really needs to do is kind of do one of these, and he can get into a pull-up jumper. He can do a step back. He can do some sort of fancy footwork, but he really doesn't need to. When he's hitting that high hesitation dribble, guys are on their heels, worried that he's going to hit the jets and get downhill. So it's like, again, we talk about this with Jalen Williams with the Thunder as well. Like, when you have real downhill force, it creates really high quality pull-up jump shots. But for the most part, Ant hasn't been able to hit them. But he has been able to hit them in the postseason. This, again, all of it's relatively small sample, only one series in 2022, only one series in 2023, obviously only one game so far in this series. But, I mean, from a game plan standpoint, I don't really think that a Phoenix can do anything with Ant making pull-up jump shots. Like, I mean, I suppose you can go to flat-out blitzing to get the ball out of his hands, but, I mean, those are much easier reads for Ant to make than the higher-level reads and a loaded-up pick-and-roll coverage. So what does it look like when the pendulum swings the other way with Ant? That's when he's kind of like what you saw in the first half, right? Like, missing those shots, missing reads, turning the basketball over. I'll show you guys when we do some film, but Ant was actually reasonably solid making reads in the first half, taking advantage of the easy kickout passes that were there. Naz Reid hit a left wing three off of a guy digging down on him once. He made a really nice skip pass into the right corner, I think, to Nikhil Alexander-Walker for a big three early in the game. Like, he had some of those reads go through for him, but the bad version of that pendulum is when he's not making those reads and when he's missing those shots. And not only does that affect Minnesota's offense, but it also gets opportunities for Phoenix to get out in transition. One last shout out for Minnesota. I thought Nikhil Alexander-Walker was amazing on both ends of the floor in this game. I obviously finished some spot up plays, but he also ran some action for some buckets as well, and then defended super well on the perimeter. Big time win for Minnesota. That was like their best version of themselves in this matchup, just dominating the physical part of the game and Anthony Edwards outplaying the opposing stars. Adjustments for Phoenix. Again, play with more pace, run more action, get the ball to the opposite side, find entry points, do all those little things to get Minnesota in rotation. You want to see that assist percentage tick up into the 60% range, like above 60%. Using Kevin Durant as an entry point rather than as a scorer, he's got the most favorable matchup in the series. He's the guy who's most capable of getting Minnesota's defense in rotation. And then lastly, I think you kind of have to just trust the defensive game plan with Ant and hope you get a better result. And especially like when you're on the road, you just got to get one of these in Minnesota anyway. All right, moving on to Magic Cavs, and then we're going to get out of here for the night. So, story of the game was Magic's half-court offense. They had just a 62.7 offensive rating in the half-court, according to Cleaning the Glass, in this game. They were 21st in half-court offense in the regular season. So that's kind of what they are, right? As a matter of fact, their half-court offensive rating was dead last out of all 20 teams that made either the playoff or the play-in tournament. The Magic also got only 0.64 points per jump shot in this game. They are 24th in the NBA in jump shot efficiency. That was dead last out of all 20 teams that made the playoff or the play-in. So what you saw from Orlando in this game, a 63 offensive rating in the half court and 0.64 points per jump shot, that's more or less a continuation of a regular season trend with Orlando. Paolo determines most of their possessions. He's their primary ball handler. He had 9 turnovers as he's trying to learn how to do this on the fly in the playoffs. There was a possession in, I want to say it was in the third quarter. It might have been the second quarter. I can't remember. But both Wagner brothers were on the court and Paolo was on the court. And they're all standing at the three-point line and they're just throwing swing passes back and forth to each other. And all the Cavs are just closing out short. So there's no advantage because, you know, the advantage is that they're being left open to shoot, but they can't shoot. So there's not really anything being gained there. And so even when they do look to drive and play their bully ball, they're just doing it in an insane amount of traffic, and it's leading to missed shots and turnovers. It just, Orlando has a major half-court offensive production issue in this series. Honestly, it's funny. I picked against the Cavs in the Knicks series last year because I thought Brunson would be a better half-court shot creator than Donovan Mitchell. And it's ironic because I picked Cleveland in this series against Orlando because I think their half-court shot creation is just so, so, so much better than Orlando's. Now, on the other end of the floor, I thought the Cavs did an amazing job of baiting Orlando's rim protectors in pick and roll. So, again, because Orlando went with the look that they went with a couple times at the end of the season where they went with Jonathan Isaac in the starting lineup next to Paolo Banchero. And then basically, like, they did some switching, but a lot of times Jonathan Isaac and Paolo Banchero are running deep drop coverages. Like, and with that deep drop coverage, it allows Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, and Caris LeVert to get downhill. And one of the things that you saw in this game, did it feel like to you guys that the Cavs got a bunch of dunks on dump-offs and drop-offs and pocket passes? Part of the reason for that is they were engaging Jonathan Isaac and Paolo Banchero with their ball handlers close to the rim. And once you engage the rim protector, the roll man becomes open. You have to engage him, though. If you allow him to split the difference or stay home, that puts the onus on the guard to actually make a shot. But as soon as you engage that rim protector, and you saw a lot of them, Mitchell, LeVert, and Garland were getting deep penetration, like behind the backboard before they would drop it off to Jared Allen or Evan Mobley around the rim for a dunk. Cavs had 39 points on 42 pick and rolls in this game. They had 18 points on 12 rolls and cuts to the rim. And if you remember, that was a huge issue last year in the Knicks series. Very different coverage, which we'll get into in a second, but they were much more successful in pick and roll against Orlando today. Just to juxtapose this for you. So again, the Cavs ran 42 pick and rolls. The Magic ran 37. The Cavs got 39 points out of those 42 pick and rolls, including passes. The Magic only got 14 points out of those 37 pick and rolls, including passes, for comparison. So obviously that was a major issue. On a coverage standpoint, though, I mentioned there's a different coverage. So one of the reasons why the series last year with New York went south for Cleveland in pick and roll was the Knicks brought Julius Randle up to the level of the screen every single time. That forced the short roll pass to Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley was then working downhill with Mitchell Robinson kind of splitting the difference between him and Jared Allen. And that two-on-one was very rarely ending in a basket. And so Cleveland's offense fell apart. One of the advantages with aggressive pick and roll coverages, so high drop, blitz, hedge, anything that involves the screen defender coming out high, that puts the onus on the short roll man to be the playmaker. When you run low drop, it puts the onus on the guard to be the playmaker. The Cavs guards are good playmakers. The Cavs forwards and centers are not good playmakers. And so honestly, that's going to be the biggest adjustment that I want to see from Orlando is either just have Paolo and Jonathan Isaac switch those ball screens, which they did do more of in the second half of this game. But I would just be aggressive up at the level consistently in all their pick and roll coverages, because that actually baits Cleveland into their biggest weakness offensively, which is their short roll playmaking and scoring. And so again, like that's kind of a little coverage thing that I think that Orlando can do to try to kind of turn the tide in this particular series. But shout out to Donovan Mitchell, though. I thought he was amazing in this game. He came out guns blazing. I think he's the best player in the series, and he played like it today. All right. So there we go. All four games in the books for day one. Again, these nighttime shows are going to be a little more surface level, a little bit more kind of big picture. The film sessions will be more in the weeds. I may or may not do one tomorrow morning. Keep an eye on the feeds. My schedule for tomorrow, just so you guys know, I'm going to do an upload after the final buzzer of Mavs Clippers that's just going to go on YouTube. And then we're going with Colin Cowherd after Pacers Bucks. So we'll have two shows tomorrow for sure. Potentially a third in the morning film session. Just keep an eye on my Twitter feed. I'll let you guys know if we get to that point. All right, guys, that's all I have for today. Day one in the books. This is going to be fun. It's going to be a crazy couple of months, but I appreciate you guys rocking with me. We're going to have a good time along the way. I will see you guys tomorrow.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.